Views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs. Gaddafi didn't give up. In the months leading up to the military intervention, he called on African and Muslim nations to join together to create this new currency that would rival the dollar and euro. They would sell oil and other resources around the world only for gold dinars. It's an idea that would shift the economic balance of the world. Countries' wealth would depend on how much gold they have, not how many dollars they trade. And Libya has 144 tons of gold.
Welcome, welcome everyone to Candle Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Dave from LA, coming to you live from FEMA region number 6. Today is April the 4th, 2019, and we have a live show for you today on this Thursday. At any time, if you'd like to get in on the conversation, don't hesitate. Give us a call, 704-802-5056. 704-802-5056 is the call-in number. We will see you in queue, and we'll definitely bring you up and look forward to engaging in a conversation with you all about anything that you would like to talk about for today's show or anything at all. And just before we go, as we already said, today's Thursday, April the 4th, 2019, of 2019 is the anniversary of Dr. King's assassination. Don't want that to be escaped upon us or forgotten by us all in the significance of that. And I'll touch lightly on that today. In today's show is going to be current events, and I would just say, excuse me, y'all, I'm kind of behind on a lot of things. My stepfather, who practically raised me, passed away the other morning, on Tuesday morning, and he was terminally ill with cancer. I'm glad that that part of the pain and suffering is over, and I just want to say thank you all for the listeners that sent out their energy, their prayers, and their well intentions to me and to our family. We greatly appreciate it. And you know, I have to tell you something that was so profound to me. There was a listener that I've known for a very, very long time from the back in it when I was actually with Blackonomics on Black Talk on Blackonomics on the Empowerment Radio Network. And my man T had T, know who you are. Greatly appreciate you, brother. My man T had sent me a condolence card because of my you know, he knew that my stepdad was terminally ill, and I received a card from T that I greatly appreciate. Thank you, T. And I knew once I saw who it was from, I knew what it was about. And I said, it's not time to open it. And it's so funny, ladies and gentlemen. I think that, you know, we can all feel different things. And then it was Tuesday morning, early Tuesday morning, and I had a feeling that my stepfather was not going to, you know, be in the physical form, which is okay, much longer. But it was so significant because the card that T had sent me, it was as if my spirit was moved to, now's the time to open it. And I went to open the card, and as I'm opening the card, I just felt that my stepfather had made the great transformation at that moment. I could actually feel it, similar to when my brother had passed. Just knew it, and my brother was, it wasn't like my stepfather that we knew was going to make the great transformation. But as soon as I opened the letter, it was time for me to open the letter, and at that time I had the feeling that my stepdad had made the great transformation. And I read it, and then I sat it down, and I knew. And within 15 minutes, my sister called and said that her dad had made the transformation. And I just thought it was so pivotal for us as people, that speaks to our strength and abilities. And, you know, my stepdad, Alfred, was and is a magnificent, magnificent person. He taught me so much as far as always staying positive, always having a different take on things. And I, you know, it was just so, he was so influential in my life. You know, during the times he introduced me to baseball, to boxing, and so many other different things. We spent so much time together when I was a child, and just a great, great, just a great person. And when I went to see him, just speaking volumes about him, when I went to see my stepdad, one of the things that touched me the most, he was sleeping as I went into his room. Went into his room, and I woke him. And as soon as he woke and he saw me, in this stern, strong Jamaican accent, went into just happy. And he looked at my wife, and he went into telling her, I mean, he was in a dead sleep and woke up. I mean, a deep sleep. And he woke up, he looked at my wife and said to her, and he was talking about me to her. And here it is, he's terminally ill, and he's not even speaking about himself. He's speaking about someone else. And it was just one of the defining moments, one of the many defining moments in my life as to how precious it is to give. And so had a great time to spend with him, which he was prepared for and he knew. And my stepdad was hilarious. I mean, just the stories, I call it Alfredisms. And I'll share some of them at sometimes, just hilarious. And he knew he was ready, and I'm glad that he's no longer suffering in physical pain. And once again, I just want to thank you all for your prayers, your energy, and your well wishes for our family. And, you know, I'm just thinking, you know, I might have to take some time off because I'm going to have to go back, because my mom, and just in the past 14 months, my mom has lost, my mom has experienced a great transformation from people that were directly impactful in her life and significant in her life, from my brother, my uncle, who was her best friend, to her sister, to my stepdad, all within, it's basically, when I really look at it, and it's just that time in space in our lives that these type of things come. But for my mom, and just in the past 13 months, every 3 months, someone significant has made the great transformation. So I'm going to have to take some time off to actually spend time with my mom, and I'm kind of concerned about just her overall mental well-being. So just want to say thank you all, and greatly, greatly appreciate you all. And these things are going to, you know, this is a part of the eternity of life. It happens, and I don't, and I wouldn't want, it's, to me, is one of the most beautiful things about life. And so we must celebrate it and understand it, but I don't think we should ever take it for granted, like, oh, this is just what happens. Because no, that doesn't just happen. It's a real, real part of life. It's and we can't take those things for granted. So with that being said, we're going to move on into today's show, and today's show is going to be for the 4th of April, 2019. We have current events. I'm kind of behind on some current events, so just bear with me in today's show. I wasn't quite sure if I was going to do the show, because there's a bunch of things that I need to do, but didn't want to not have a show with you all. What's up, Pastor Keith?
What's going on, my brother?
Good. You can you can move it.
You straight?
Yeah, you can just move
that little new one or the old one.
She was nothing wrong with that one. Go take a look. Go take a look.
The new one or the old one?
That's the old one.
What do you mean? There's nothing wrong with it.
Go look at the new one. Go take a look at the new one. I'm sorry, y'all. Hold on 1 second. We're on air, Keith. Could you just do it? So Pastor Keith is in the building. So today's show's current events for April the 4th, 2019. We're going to get into it. Before we get into that, but everyone, please support Black Talk Radio Network so that we can have a network that we can actually come and meet and talk and share. And that you can do by going to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com, www.blacktalkradionetwork.com, and hit the donation prompt that's there. But the best way to support the network is by going to www.btrcommunity and signing up for a social media platform to become a member for only $24 a year. You can become a member and you can engage in all your social media activities from there without being as adversely affected as you would be on the mainstream ones such as Facebook and Twitter and Twitter. And, you know, Keith, I saw something. I didn't put it within the news that because of the cloud, that over, I think it was something like, it was a large number. Like, I want to say, I can't remember what the number was, but it was over a million. It was millions of people's data.
Billion.
It was a billion. Yeah, I didn't want to say a billion, but yeah, it was a billion people's data was lost or was compromised through Facebook, through the cloud. Purposely, all purposely done. So be aware. That's why I signed up for a BTR community and become a member. You don't have to worry about the whole world being on that form, and you don't have to worry about your identity being sold. And, you know, even though all of our identity has been sold and everything else, you know, in so many different ways, but it's just a more holistic way of engaging in the actual process of social media. So come on over to BTR Community. Also, let's get into, also, if you would like to acquire real money, now's the time to go to Prosperity Mint, ProsperityMint.com, and actually exchanging your debt notes for real money. And that will be extremely beneficial to you, because you need to be saving in real money. And you can do that at Prosperity Mint. And then what you can do is just email them at info@prosperitymint.com. tell them that I sent you, your Tando radio show listener, and someone will contact you so that they can explain the buying process to you. And just leave a number when you do that so that they can text you or call you and set up a time they could call you and just explain to you the overall buying process. And that's for your overall information. It's not for anything for sales calls or anything else. So just that will be done. It's not going to be like when you go to registers and they ask you for your phone number and everything else, and then they sell that information. That information will not be sold, will not be used, will not be held on to outside of your overall engagements with Prosperity Mint. They just want to make sure that you understand the overall buying process. Believe me, you need to do it, and you'll see why once you do that. Okay, so we're going to get into what's in the news. Keith, before we get going, you have anything, my friend?
No, sir.
Great. So we're going to get into what's in the news, but today is April the 4th, and it would be remiss if we didn't speak about the significant anniversary of Dr. King's assassination is today. And I just want to say before we get going in the show that I really, really have always admired Dr. King for his strength. And what I mean by that was that, you know, Dr. King could have been, let me just say this, Keith, and I have no problem saying this, and we all, I think, would agree, that poverty brings about a mental illness that is quite significant. Poverty brings about a mental illness that's quite significant. And we see that in so many forms and fashions, and particularly within our community. The poverty really does instigate and is the primary driver for the destructive behavior that it produces, you know, and it's produced much, much unnecessary violence, unnecessary destruction, because that's what poverty does. And, you know, and it's and just in the form of the assassination of Dr. King, and, you know, even other senseless, unnecessary homicide. Many of those in our community is directly linked to poverty, an impoverished ignorance, an impoverished mentality, and just the state of poverty itself. And when you deal with poverty and what poverty produces, the lack of proper nourishment, the lack of proper stability, the stress, the love that we actually experience, the stress love that we experience, it does strengthen, but it definitely brings about a mental illness, because, you know, mental illness is like it is an illness. You can catch it, you know, and poverty is really one of the conditions that really brings about mental illness. And so we see a lot from that. We continuously deal with the destructive nature of that. And I would say that from a lot of the unnecessary killings, unnecessary homicides, from Dr. King to Martin, to Malcolm, to Mega Evers, to so many people, it all stems from poverty. It is all gripped there. Even from, you know, recent homicides, you know, and I really didn't, you know, talk about these type of things because from this standpoint, I think should, from you know, Tupac to Biggie to, you know, and Pac. I actually worked as Pac's bodyguard in his last live performance at the House of Blues. And I was speaking to Pac, and I knew that this young brother wasn't going to be here much longer because of his loyalty. And I said something to him, and he knew, and he absolutely knew. And you know, over a couple of days ago, Nipsey was murdered in L.A. And if you really look at it, all of this really stems from poverty.
You know what, Dave? You know, I haven't had to say go around the band to explain some points or, you know, to bring some stuff out. But I think it's real interesting. One of the real popular movies that are out right now. I know you're biting at the bit to go see it yourself. But the movie is called Us. And the ones that saw Us, there's a lot of talk about what it means, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I had a son send me something that kind of explains some of the things that's gone on in the movie with the metaphors and stuff. I'd like to read a little bit about that because it goes in. It says, but this moment of awareness is immediately followed by... Now, let's see. And that's a huge theme of Us overall. The movie constantly reminds the audience that America's story as one of history perpetually being forgotten and rewritten. Like the genocide of Native Americans, whose iconography gets briefly appropriated and then hastily remodeled for the maze that starts the story. Characters frequently speak of forgetting things. Adelaide's entire character is rooted in forgetting. The ones that don't have the luxury of losing their memories are the ones who remain underground. So you haven't seen the movie, but it talks about they have identical people just like themselves who lead normal lives like us, but there's another whole character that lives underground that's brutal, that's mm-hmm. just... Mm-hmm. Okay, so it says, I never forgot you, Red Charles Adelaide, that was her other self. That's because not only are they forced to live out appropriate approximations of real life without agency over their own bodies or identities, but they are the only witness to their own misery and enslavement. A red world, a good memory is the key to escape. What that's saying is, it talks about exactly what you were just talking about. And I can relate as a black person, because we live alternate life to the life that America is painted to live. You know, you hear little snippets about it, about only us going to stores to get followed around, and we got all these special things that we're marked for everything. We live an alternate underground life that nobody's privy to but us. And even though it's our everyday life, if you look at our history, what is our history? It's constantly being rewritten. It's constantly being told in a way differently than we know it happened. And we suffer these things every day in the midst of everybody else's society living among us. And I think that's profound because of what you're saying. If you look at high crime, if you look at all those things you talked about, they're always present in areas of poverty. It's not coincidence. And I just think that was real powerful in light of what you were saying.
It isn't it's the objective. Absolutely. It's the method. It's the preferred method to achieve an objection. And that objection is to be able to circumvent and to be able to manipulate someone's free will to be subservient to something or someone else. And it's an actual enslavement. And so, yeah, Keith, I see what you're referring to as far as that overall, the overall movie. And Keith, you know, the thing about, to me, and me personally, and these are just my personal opinions, it is really a well-organized criminal conspiracy that's held against mankind. And it has to be done because the wealth of each and every individual is enough to sustain the overall universal, the universal wealth. Because you think about our universe, it's extremely wealthy. It has everything that any living entity needs to sustain itself. But what happens is that I think that, you know, when we live in the ecosystem, which the great creator gives us instead of civilization, what man gives us, we lose real connection with that, and this is where you first become impoverished. Now it's always a matter of you having to fight for, or you having to be able to be in a position to where you can, instead of something being your birthright, now you have to pay for it. And because of that, it encompasses ourselves. And mankind can only, in my opinion, mankind can only really subjugate similar likeness to itself. Now, there are animals that man can forcibly place under siege, and that has been done.
Is being done.
And it's been the practice, and it really domesticates you to be able to carry on that mentality. But in that mentality is always a measure of lack. In man's economy, a man's civilization is always a measure of lack. There's always a caste system. There's always a pyramid. And it's not in a good form and fashion that this is about, because the great creator creates abundantly with benevolency with all that is created. And I believe that everything that the great creator has made has a free will.
Well, you know, it would be remiss of me not to bring up some words of the good book.
Mm-hmm.
And in parts of it, it says that, you know, he blesses some with much and some with less, but he does it in a way that nobody should go without their needs being fulfilled. Which goes back into the struggle of good and evil, because the fact of the matter is we have to fight against our natural selves. And I know I'm getting into some theology, but we're getting into absolute reality as well, because the fact of the matter is, what is it that I want? Sure, I want that piece of pie. The only thing that's better than that piece of pie is two pieces of pie.
And Keith, you know, and I started this because we were talking about Dr. King and what's happening, you know, and I'm glad you said that about the pie. Of course, I want the two pieces of pie. And I say that, and I started this here, and you really struck it there, and I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I wanted to, because I'm going to come back to what you were saying. If you look at Dr. King's life, it was really a measure of the premature murder, the murder of Dr. King, or the physical transformation, the premature physical transformation was invoked by murder. And if you really look at all of our lives, we are all summarily murdered here under this, because of how we live. Every single person is murdered. No one makes the great transformation of natural causes. And I don't think that that's the case. Because this system in which we live under is constantly moving to kill you. It's constantly moving to take from you.
Okay, so when you say we...
Mm-hmm. When I say we, I mean all of mankind that's under the overall, all of mankind. Because this system is evil enough to that no one is favored.
Okay, so when you talk about the 0.01%ers, they're in the same boat that we are.
Absolutely. And here's why, Keith, I think. You cannot willfully execute these measures of evil without that poison killing you as well. The poison in which the system is defined by is so corrosive that all that engage in it destroys.
Okay, so
it's sweet. Now, some people may have a sweeter taste with it and may think perception.
The system was concocted.
Yes.
And controlled by individuals.
Right.
They carried this thing out, and they carried this thing out because it's their desire to do so.
Right. And they're not immune to the adverse effects of it all.
And they're not immune to it. Now, because there's a difference between...
They're destroyed as well by invoking this and conceptualizing it and energizing this.
Okay, so it's very interesting again.
Now, I would just say this, Keith. The devil has no habit.
Okay, so let me say this because it's very interesting again. I'm going to go back to the movie that I was just reading from. I don't know if I should do that because I hate to be a spoiler.
Then don't spoil it. Just use something else.
I can't. That was so profound. We're going to have to talk about this on a later date.
Okay.
But
oh well.
Ultimately, according to philosophy,
say what you're going to say.
You
Keith.
Might be. So in the end, what happens is they switch places, and we don't know they switch places. And the one that was originally switched, which is actually the good one, ends up killing the bad one, which was originally the bad one. But
which originally was the good one.
Which is weird.
So they just switched. You didn't have to. Yeah.
But even though, so ultimately the villain was killed, it didn't feel like it. And the one that did it had to deal with the consequences of what she did.
Yeah, yeah.
So the victim was the victim, but even though the victim was victorious over the villain.
That's because the energy victimized everyone.
So from that point of view, it kind of makes the point that you're saying.
Yeah.
Except for the point that what if these people's conscience was seared?
Without a doubt.
My point is, these guys, it ain't affected them. Their hearts are literally stoned.
So they think.
They couldn't care less.
Yeah. So they think. The care less is the true part, Keith. You're absolutely right. They care less. But there is no way that you can have the acid of moral debasement without it burning through you. And what happens is that it would, in my opinion, what it's able to do is able to sear away any of the benevolency that created you.
Absolutely.
And so, like I was saying, the devil has no heaven. Only the devil always creates and lives in hell. And if you act like the devil, you will always live like the devil, because you will become the devil, because then in state and point, you are. You are.
Well, I see where you're going.
So now, because the fictitious and facade of wealth that the economy creates is a facade. It's not wealth at all.
But
it's not wealth at all.
I wouldn't mind having a part of that facade, my brother.
I want no part of it, and you don't either. Because it's
just a little bit.
No.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Stop it, Keith.
Just a little bit.
Stop it, Keith. Okay, so then, so basically, what you and I know, I'm just gonna say this. So Keith, you'll be willing to.
Just a little bit, brother.
To get your ghost, your phantom.
Just a little bit.
So you're gonna rob the coffers of tithes and offerings. Hold on, Keith. Let me finish.
I just want a little bit.
And get your Rolls Royce.
I just want.
And I know that ain't you. So just stop. No, you don't.
Back in your day.
No, you don't.
There was
I know you.
There
I know
movie.
You. So don't
there
even.
There was a movie. I'm sure you remember. You probably 20, 25 when this movie came out. But it was Superman. And it was Superman.
Which one? The first one?
With old boy. What was his name? What was that?
Christopher.
Now the black comedian. That old time was real.
Richard boy. Pryor was in the movie.
Richard Pryor.
Okay. Yeah, with Richard Gene Hackman.
And you remember what he was doing? Okay, so
I wasn't in my 20s. I was.
You were probably.
I was
yet.
No, I was nowhere near. But go ahead.
Well, he was in charge of his service, and what he was doing was he was in charge of national payroll.
Mm-hmm.
So in his national payroll, as the people were paid out on their checks, there was oftentimes a 0.5% mm-hmm. on people's paycheck. But of course, you can't pay out 0.5%.
Mm-hmm.
So he took that 0.5%
mm-hmm.
and it made him
mm-hmm.
big, big, big money.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knows that 0.5%.
Mm-hmm.
I just want a little bit of that, the 0.5% thing.
Chief, you're messing up the show, Chief. You're messing up the show. The co-host is messing up the show. Stop it, Chief. So, but I want to say that because in flux to Dr. King, and this being the anniversary of his assassination, it was poverty and greed that ultimately was accomplished in his overall assassination, in his demise by his inner circle of people around him.
Was it more poverty and greed and from the viewpoint of racism and control?
I think all of the ingredients were applied there. But the one that was the most venomous one was just before Dr. King, the night before on the 3rd, if you watch when he gave his last sermon, because that really was a sermon.
Yeah.
When Dr. King gave his last sermon, he knew what was coming and he knew what was closing around him because, you know, they had threatened him and they tried to get him to kill himself and everything else. And, you know, Dr. King was a massive depressant. And they knew that. And, you know, they knew that they could trigger that.
Push him over the edge.
The suicide part.
Yeah.
But when Dr. King invoked the choice of who he wanted to be and what he wanted to give, that's where the ego and what the great creator had put in him, that's where that shined over any of the flaws that have been taught in schools, right? The temptations and everything else. Because the overall sustainable truth was always being spoken. And that's very, very important. The truth doesn't need us. We need the truth.
Right.
So the thing, I'm saying that because of this and show you how greed and poverty, there were individuals in this camp that wanted him to stop going against the U.S. with the war and stop the poverty and stop talking about, you know, the poverty and way in which he was speaking about it. And he wouldn't compromise. So what did the system do? He was no longer the preferred poster person for the movement that they wanted him to invoke. They just wanted him to stay with civil rights because civil rights enslaved people even more than Jim Crow did. It did. And most,
looking back on it with 2020 hindsight.
Yes, because the devil was always in the details and people don't look at those details. They go with the overall. See, people, they just go with what you were schooled on.
Yeah.
And you didn't know the personalities and the individuals that were behind all of this stuff and what it was really, really garnished for. It was garnished for government control of people even more extensively. And people to give into that willfully. So what did they need? They needed the perfect, perfect propaganda campaign to get everybody to be willful participants in it all. And it worked. And it worked very, very well. And it's still working to this day.
Sure, it's even more so now than it did. But I think it's important to bring out, because this falls in line with everything we've talked about. And that is, I don't think it originally came out that way. But as time went by,
it did.
They corrupted it into that because
In my opinion, it was corrupted immediately. And if you notice, when Dr. King was there signing it, look at his body language.
That's when he was signing it. And remember, and the reason why I say this, and I hear what you're saying.
Well, not when he was signing it. When it was there, when Johnson
right.
was signing.
But see, to me, and it'd be real interesting for people to look this up, which goes back into what you were saying. But it kind of, civil rights was going on for a little bit, right? But as soon as civil rights were going on, King started changing too.
Sure.
And if you go back and listen to his message, what he's talking about, sure. Look, we are coming to Washington to get our paycheck.
Yeah.
You know, and if you listen to that speech, it's powerful because he talks about all the things that they've done to black people, cheating out of money, stuff like that.
Sure.
You know, so that came, that wasn't the in the first part of civil rights movement. That was kind of revealed a little bit as the civil rights movement went on, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And where I'm saying, in line of what you're saying, it just seems like, again, what happens is you come out with anything. Mm-hmm. And that's what me and Scotty, all of us talk about. It starts out good, where good intentions.
Well, no, it has, They write things in creed and deed are two different things. Their creed may say, oh, this is what we're going to give you. But what they're giving you is poison. This is why, if this system, think about it. Why would, when we really think about this in hindsight of 2020, right? So let's have a little 2020 looking backward in hindsight, meaning we go back. Why would you ever think that a criminal organization is going to get morally correct because you asked them to?
What criminal organization are you talking about?
The Corporation of the United States. If the Corporation of the United States intentions, and they got extremely wealthy in their own system from being enslavers, right? What makes it, and that business was thriving and was profitable from that. There's no profitable business that ever goes out of business. You can't name a profitable business that's gone out of business. It doesn't. Only time businesses go out of business is when their bottom line is less than what their overall expenses are. They can't stay in business. So what happens is this, is that they realize that, hey, we're going to have to modify this and revolutionize this so that we can continue to make profit off of it, give the appearance that we're doing something, but what we're actually doing is still maintaining the overall mentality of subjugation and enslavement. The thing is, they'll tell you what slavery is so that they can have you always enslaved. They'll tell you that it's the color black, but they're trying to control the whole spectrum of the color, the whole sphere of the color spectrum, right? They'll tell you it's just one color. And so that's what they masterfully did. And they were able to change that whole thing. And what happens is you never get what you thought you were going to get because it was never, ever the intentions of it all. And what you'll find is that, oh man, we've been duped again.
Yeah, let me say this. I agree with you 100%. I guess where I was looking at it differently was you're exactly right. I mean, that is entwined with our whole history and the makeup and the coming together as this country, without a doubt. I guess what I was referring to is because you're absolutely right, 100% right on that. But you had all kind of other corporations. Right?
Like the United States is a corporation.
Yeah, but I was talking about all kind of other people that were employing people and stuff, mm-hmm. that were fair, that treated their people right, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And over time, even those got corrupted to where they looked like these very evil corporations that started it from the beginning. And I guess I was referring more to those corporations, but you're exactly right.
Yeah,
you know, if you look at slavery didn't just finance the South. You know,
finance the world.
It financed the world. It financed northern United States and everybody else as well.
So right.
You're exactly right.
It financed the world.
But it ended up corrupting. So they were absolutely corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
But they ended up corrupting everybody else who wasn't necessarily corrupt at that time.
Yes. And so, in keeping, what I was saying is that, then we get into what's in the news, and we got Brother Davis. I'll go to Brother Davis. It was when Dr. King, if you look at Dr. King on the third, at this last sermon, when he finishes saying everything that he says, and really go back and listen to the whole thing, over and over and over again. It's basically that he's telling everyone around him and those that would need to hear that things may be difficult, but you should never lose your overall objectives. You don't need me to get there. It's promised to you if you continue to strive in spite of all of the snakes around you. And he said it in such an elegant way. He was talking about his camp around him. In my opinion, particularly Ralph and Jesse.
Oh my goodness.
And so at the end of that.
So you think he knew about Ralph and Jesse?
Oh, without a doubt. How could he not? How could he not? He's been around them. He's seen their overall body demeanor. He knows their ambition. You know, at that time, that one dude was as ambitious as Lucifer himself.
I was going to say, you definitely had Judas.
Yeah, and so
you definitely had Judas.
And so, Keith, but if you look at it, after the speech is over, and Dr. King was ill that night, but I think that his immune system was so low from
fatigue
and everything else. So that if you look at it, at the end of the speech, when Ralph comes over to hug him, and he knows that he's going to die tomorrow.
Wait, Keith, listen.
When Dr. King finished saying what he was saying, he went limp. When his so-called friend came to hug him and grab him, when he just told you that he knows that he's going to be killed, and he encouraged everyone to move on without him. When the man came to hug him, what did he do? He went limp. Already knew. Next day, after Lorraine, when Dr. King gets out of the car, you can see it in certain people's faces that there's an anxiety that's there. And as Dr. King goes to the step, to start to walk up the steps, that's a Lorraine. It's the individual that taps his shoulder, puts his hand on his shoulder. And I talked about this before.
Yeah.
Every sniper needs a spotter. The hand on the shoulder, to me, that Ralph Abernathy, when he put his hand on Dr. King's shoulder, he was identifying where King was and who the target was. So, and I say that because of this. The state of poverty has brought about such a mental illness that we compromise our own morality for someone else's agenda quite frequently. And I just hope that at some point, sometime,
we compromise
our morality for someone else's agenda.
Okay. Do we do this knowingly or unknowingly?
I think both. Because
it depends on what is your
will. It depends on what your will is. And then our will can be so distorted because of the insane state of poverty. When a mankind is not able to fulfill its true capabilities, there's a lacking that happens there. And in that, there's an insufficient measure that happens that wants
a hole.
A black hole.
That's unfulfilled.
Yeah, a black hole that turns. And it continues to absorb all of the light that you have and darkens everything. And this is how we get to act the way that we act. This is how we have the desires that we get to desire. This is how we become the predators. And this is how we become the abusers. This is how we become the facilitators of death, destruction, and demise.
You become
what you had to endure. And it's a difficult thing. So,
and that goes back to the same message in that movie. But it's so interesting because...
I'm going to go to Brother Davis after you. Go ahead.
Go to Brother Davis.
No, no, no. Finish what you were going to say. I just want to Brother Davis.
Which is the whole thing of, again, I don't want to be remiss, but that's the whole purpose of being a reflection of light in the dark world. And the fact of the matter is that's never, ever going to be an easy task.
But it's the only health, it's the healthiest thing for you to do, is to resonate at a frequency level that's so high that you can create light. Because that's really what light is the high frequency.
Well, so, in this case, I believe it's we're reflecting light, not creating light.
There we go, Chief. All right. We're the silver. So let's, I got Brother Davis and Q, then we'll get into what's in the news. Sorry, you all, just, you know, sometimes we go in different directions. You were talking about current events, so we're on topic with today's show. So let's go to Brother Davis. Brother Davis, welcome to Tando Radio Show. What say you?
Well, good morning. Great show as usual. I tell you, you have a lot on the plate, brother. First of all, let me extend my condolences to you. If there's anything me and my wife or family can do, we'd like to believe that all you have to do is pick up a phone. In reference to the show,
Brother Davis, that we already know.
Pardon me?
I said, thank you, Brother Davis, and that, believe me, I already know.
Okay, I received that, brother. I received that. We have to accept the fact that we have failed ourselves. When I say we have failed ourselves, when I study the Akashic Records, and the Akashic Records are the history of time. They are the premortal writings of those who have come before us. We literally were chosen to be here. We were one of the few people chosen to be here. We have every aspect of the DNA that is being sought after. What do I mean being sought after? I mean, if you look at what they're doing with computers and everything, they're doing it because they want to fine-tune what we are mechanically. They want to control us so bad that literally the computers are designed behind the brain. Not just the human brain, the African brain. Why the African brain? Because it possesses the essence of DNA from the creator. There is no intuitiveness in a computer. There is intuitiveness in us as a people. There is no right side to a computer. Now, what is right side? You have two aspects of your brain, a right hemisphere and a left hemisphere. The left hemisphere is analytical. They got that. A computer could analyze anything. But the right hemisphere is creative. A computer cannot create anything given a few circumstances. Why? Because it does not have the ability that we have. Our circumstances are the way they are because of the destruction of physical destruction and the mental destruction. The physical destruction was the millions of people they had to kill off to force their way of life on us. The mental destruction is the fact that we had to submit ourselves because of the tyranny that was brought on us. The sad part about it is that we still moved away from the responsibility of the original writings. And what was that? We were given a temple to house our spirit, and it was our responsibility. We neglected just that. Just the essence of what I told you has brought us to this whole point now. But just as the Creator puts in place, He always lays a solution there. So time has brought forth the whole cycle. The DNA is being reawakened. That's why when you hear these people talking about awakening, they're talking about being awakened, they're talking about that because something's happening to them, but they don't know what. They don't know that it's not only physical, but it's micro and it's macro. This is going all over the whole system because the DNA is waking up. So they don't know how to deal with this. In a time, now listen very carefully, in a time when every institution that has been known to be the foundation of man is falling apart. Even this concept of leadership. And I see through my studies, I've seen a lot of this developing. That's why, Dave, if you remember when we first started RDP, I was telling people, you are the generals. You're not going to be leaders. You're the generals. What does that mean? That their people will follow you. And they'll only follow you because you're already ahead of the game by being at that particular place at that particular time. And right now, it's happening in a larger scale because there are more people who are beginning to notice something but don't know how to deal with it, because things like fear come in such a multiplicity of roles. They have to find out what their fear is before they can defeat the fear. That's why it's always being perpetuated. They know that. When we come to the realization that we are going to take control of our lives, we will no longer attach ourselves to their systems, because as long as we attach ourselves to their systems, we're under their control. And we have to understand that they teach us things to keep us weak. And the reason why they teach us things to keep us weak is because if we rely on what they give us, we've already subdued ourselves. But when we step out on our own into the area of our own personal growth and decide, you know what, I'm going to provide that for myself instead of accepting it from you, because then I can control how much I want and how much I'm going to consume and how much I need. All of these are the things, the blocks that keep us where we are. And last but not least, we begin to understand that we are the Savior. We are not looking for somebody to save us. Because when you do, guess what? You're weakened, because you're waiting for someone else to do it. It's not the responsibility of you to seek a Savior. It's the responsibility of you to sustain under any circumstances. Now, as this here whole millennium starts to come to fruition, you already see countries, governments, school systems, health systems, all of the major institutions breaking down. Why? Because they no longer offer a solution to the circumstance. It is our responsibility to become the leader in our life and stop seeking somebody to lead us. When we wake up to just that essence of understanding, we start a very, very, very powerful momentum that will never be stopped. But until we do, we're going to attach ourselves to a system that will keep us enslaved any way they want to make a slave out of you. I just wanted to add that, brother. And great show, and it's always good to have Black Talk Radio available to us to give us a knowledge that we could not get anywhere else.
Brother David, well said. Greatly appreciate, you know, I just want to highlight some of the things that Brother David said, you know, just the part about they teach us to live in fear, and they expand on our weakness. That's so true. That's really what the school system is really, in my opinion, created for, is to develop the weakness, not to develop the overall talents and ability of the individuals, but to develop a weakness so that they'll all be dependent upon the system that they're in school to learn. And so, well said, Brother Davis. And yes, I remember with RDP, Brother Davis would always say, you have to be the general. You will be the generals. And that general position is one that is able to endure the situation and have a plan of solution to all that attacks.
And I think you have to, because even though Brother Davis was telling the absolute truth and speaking reality, it's still a metaphor of what's going on. What I mean by that is the same thing that he was saying. They were now determined that the original DNA is only found in a black woman. And the reason why I bring that out is because now they're coming out with all these kids and everything else and all these organs that are missing, because it's a highly, highly financial field for, the best donors for these are black kids. The reason why I say it's a metaphor is because you find them because of the DNA. Mm-hmm. All we go to the African background. But why I say it's a metaphor is exactly what Brother Davis was talking about, is what they want to do. They want to come in harvest these people, take what they got, use it for their own personal, whatever they want to use it for, and then pass it to everything and everybody else. Just like they do the African lands, just like they do the foreign oil, just like the they do everybody else's resources.
The human resource. Hold on, Chief, we're got to go to a commercial break. When we come back, we'll pick up some of that. You're listening to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
Okay, welcome back, everyone, to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, give us a call, 704-802-5056, 704-802-5056 is the call-in number. Keith, we were talking just before we went into the commercial break about this is why the harvesting of the resources from the continent and the human resource, which I always say is the preferred precious resource is the human resource. This is why corporations, you always say here that they have human relations, right? That's what it is, because it's human. People are looked upon as a resource, like oil, like land, like gold, like silver. So, but you were saying just before we went into the commercial break.
Yeah, pretty much exactly in line with what Brother Davis was just saying, and right in line with what you just got done saying.
And I say that because I talked about Dr. King, because in spite of what he could do, what I mean by in spite of what he could do, if he had done what the system wanted him to do, he would have lived past the Lorraine.
Absolutely.
He would have been, in my opinion, one of the most influential persons until he decided that, no, I'm not going to carry that water anymore.
When you say one of the most influential persons,
his overall celebrity status and his overall impact, his celebritized impact would have been much, much greater.
Okay.
I would say this, that he would have become what you see the speed and velocity of the impact of the internet. Dr. King would have had that impact globally. If he would have
sold himself out and carried on their nebulous agenda.
Without a doubt. If he would have carried that nefarious agenda on, it would have been, yes. He would have had the impact at the speed and the overall depth and velocity of the internet now, back then.
Okay, so the question is, would he have been more of an impact, or was he more of an impact with what he did?
Well, in my overall opinion, the impact that what he did was the impact that the universe always had.
Which is?
You're eternal.
What about the impact that he did as being a martyr?
I mean, I think that that's definitely, you know, significant, but it was a personal choice.
They always a personal choice.
Yeah, there was a personal choice. And I think that that personal choice was that it wasn't a matter of being a martyr, you know, because that happens. Other people put that over, put that title on you, you know. But I think it was basic, and it was one that was heavy on Dr. King, because you could see it bearing its weight on him daily.
Absolutely.
And he regardless of what the overall weight was, regardless of the overall the overall weight that they're putting, regardless of the plates, as they continue to add the plates of weight to them, the overall impact of those plates were great.
Absolutely.
But the strength that he used to push those weights away from him was greater. And this is one thing that I always want to say. I think we always have to be truthful in this. When we ask for strength from the great creator, believe me, you're going to get it, and you're going to have a half situation that you're going to have to use it on.
Okay, so with that being said,
because I don't think the great creator is wasteful.
Right. So with that being said, we have to put things in perspective, right? And what I mean by putting things in perspective goes back to what we were saying a second ago. In order to maintain your level of morale that you should carry, sacrifices have to be made. Now, the fact of the matter is that sacrifice might take your life.
Oh, it will. It always will. But in taking, in that happening, it wasn't as if your overall physical existence wasn't going to end anyhow.
But it could have been lengthened.
It could have been lengthened. But
at what cost?
At what cost? And in this world, it sometimes is better to fight and go where you're supposed to go. You know, one of my favorite things is Dr. Cass. He said it during his last sermon. Longevity has its place, meaning that you go to where you're supposed to go.
And do what you're supposed to do
and not want 1 second more. And that's for him to say it, it took a strength and a resolve that I don't know that I have.
Well, so that brings up 3 points.
But he did.
It brings up 3 points.
But he did.
Yeah, it brings up 3 points for me. Two of them comes from the word itself. And it says, look, when you can't do anything else, when you put on the armor, you can't do anything else. Just stand. In other words, I ain't got nothing left.
Right.
There's nothing more I can do. All I can do is just stand. And but the other 2 points that he brings up.
And in that standing, the thing about that standing is not just the matter of you just stand. That may be the most difficult thing for you to do, because that may take everything that you have.
Absolutely.
To do it.
A complete sacrifice. Which goes back to the point number two, which Dr. Martin Luther King said, right? He said, a man that has not found something worth dying for, and you can finish that out,
yep.
Which goes right in line with what we were saying in the first place.
Yep.
Which takes me to the third point.
Then we got another caller. Go ahead, Keith.
And the third point is, he says, look, when you run into this situation, don't worry about what you might say, because you don't know. And you're not going to have the result, because that's not going to ultimately come from you anyhow. But he says, when that time comes up, he says, he'll supply you what you need to say or what you need to do at that moment. Because the fact of the matter is, until you really hit the resolve to where Dr. King already was before he got there and understood that he was ready to sacrifice his life, you're not going to know.
You're not going to know. Until you never know until you're in the fight, the resolve. And so very, very true, Keith. And so it's a measure of, and I don't take anything lightly. And I don't. When you look at different now, and I look at Jesse and I look at Ralph, and I didn't agree with what I believe that they did and what they were a part of. But one thing that I know is this, Keith. Guess what? How could you kill something you didn't give life to? You can't. So how can the system kill you? How could the system kill you and it didn't give you life? It can't. It absolutely can't. What I would say is, in that situation, for those individuals, I understand why you did what you did. But what you did was you only hurt yourself.
Ultimately.
Yes. You hurt only yourself. Because the pain in physical terms under this physical environment is temporal. Because our physical lives is temporal. Our spiritualness is eternal. So the spiritual constitution of it all, you can't affect. But you can affect your spiritual constitution. That's who you hurt.
Ultimately.
Sony. It's the only person you hurt was you. So this is, and then this engagement is in everything that we do, in my opinion. Let me go to this other caller that's there. Go to my man, Jenna. Jenna, welcome to Tando Radio Show. What say you, bro?
Sorry, I had my mic muted. Greetings, how are y'all doing today, all the callers and listeners?
What's up, Jenna? Good to hear your voice, brother. What's going on?
I'm still lying. My question is, what's the expiration on resolve? Living in these current times, you may have solutions, great solutions, some that may have just been created by whoever the person is, yourself, or some that's already been tried and proven, but you lack the resources to implement these solutions. And the reason I ask is, how long does resolve last? Because after trying and being defeated so many times, as a lot of us have been, you just want to give up. So my question to you all and any listeners that's listening, how long does the resolve last, and what can you do to recharge that feeling of not wanting to give up? With that, I mute myself. Thank you.
Man, Jenna, always pointed question, and greatly appreciate you. So, Pastor Keith, you want to start on that?
Yeah. To me, brother, the resolve never ends. And again, I have to go back to theology and the word, because what happens is, if we try to do this in our own strength, we don't have what it takes. You know, your resolve is going to wear out. And that's why the word says, not by your might, not by your strength, but by his. You got to rely on him for that. Because the fact of the matter is, you know, if I rely on myself, my resolve ended yesterday. Why? When the first thing you'll hear us say is, you know what, I'm tired. You know, the fact of the matter is, every morning when I wake up, I got stuff to do and I go do it. But the fact of the matter is, leave it up to me. Man, I'm turning on Hulu. I'm turning on Netflix. I'm going to go get me some bacon and eggs and some potato chips. I'm going to watch TV. If I relied on my own resolve. Because I was tired yesterday. But I have the strength to get up and go on, because I'm not relying on myself to do that. If your resolve, if you allow that resolve to end, then it's over. It's over.
Yeah, I thought it was a good question that Jenna, you know.
Told. It absolutely is.
It really is, and it speaks, and I think it is an individual thing.
It is. You know, I preached a sermon on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost falls in line with that. What is it that keeps you awake at night?
Yeah.
You know, and the fact of the matter is, if you just rely on yourself, you're not going to make it. You know?
Thank you.
You're just not going to make it. But that resolve doesn't rely on ourselves. If the fact of the matter is, what we're up against is way more powerful than we are as an individual relying on ourselves.
Yeah. You know, for me, I'm going to give a personal. Because I think what you hit on, Keith, was the macro.
Yeah.
I'm going to hit on the micro.
Yeah.
The individual. For me, and this is just for me, and every person is different. One thing that I always do, and with Jenna's question, the resolve from not giving up. Giving up is always a choice. And it's not, to me, it's a choice, and I always have to respect people that their decisions that they make, because it's not mine to make. I know for me, how I look at it and how I've looked at it in the past, is I always try to learn from the past.
Mm-hmm.
I try to always learn from others
first.
Yes, because there's more experience behind me than there is in front of me.
Absolutely.
And so I try to always learn from as many people as I possibly can. One of the things that I've learned and what worked for me is that I remember when I'm going through different things, I never run from them. I've tried to run from them, but it doesn't work. It's not productive. It becomes very unfruitful. So one, I try to have a very fruitful approach to it all. And one of the things that I've learned is that I remember when I was in high school, remember when I was in the military, remember when I was growing up, and I remember when I was a child. Because there was an approach that I took as a young child. I remember mastering the art of being lonely. And I think that every prince and every princess, before they can become king or queen, have to first learn to master the art of being lonely. What do I mean by that? You master the art of being lonely by being alone with yourself in dealing with everything you need to deal with. Because if you think about it, ultimately you're born alone, you are created alone, you are born alone, you live alone, and you ultimately make the great transformation alone. It's an individual journey. So I like to look at my individual life in the past. I remember when I was in high school. And there was a problem that I had in high school. And I thought it was the problem that was going to end the world for me. But I persevered through it, and it didn't. I remember when I was a child, and the problem that was in front of me, I thought it was going to end the world for me. I persevered through, and it didn't. I remember as an adult, the different problems that I had. I thought they were going to end the world for me. I persevered through them, and they didn't. And I think it's very healthy for us to be able to look at ourselves for what we already have. I take this approach. I'm going to live forever, so I'm not going to sweat this very moment. I'm going to do as much as I possibly can do, and then I'm going to continue to do. And then there's some things I don't give energy to. If it's something that I can't resolve, I focus on the things that I can resolve and deal with. Because believe me, there's enough of that will take all the energy that I have. So I'm selective in everything. I try not to allow any situation, regardless of what it is, to overtake me.
All right, so I got a question.
And you know what, Keith, and I'm going to tell you, with that mentality, there is no situation that will ever be able to overtake you. Does that mean that that will give you immunity from situations? Will that give you a comfort zone where you won't have to endure? Absolutely not. But you never have to have spirit to quit, especially when you realize who you really are and how, and actually what your energy is. Energy can never ever be extinguished. It only moves. Once energy is created, it can't be destroyed. So we're continuous. So that's how I personally deal with challenging moments. I remember it didn't end the world when I was a child, grade school, high school, as a young adult and everything else. So this one probably won't do that as well. It appears to, and I try not to give, if there's a big, big problem that you're dealing with, what I try to do is I try to break it down. Break it down. Much smaller and much smaller, to where it's easy for you to be able to manage and navigate it. There's some instances that you won't be able to do that because the problem is quite large. But what you do have control over is your reaction to it.
All right, so with that being said, I got some questions for you.
Yep.
You pointed to several different times that you were extremely, I'll say, worried.
A challenge, a major, major challenge.
That was upcoming.
Mm-hmm.
So when you were going through those, because none of them ended the way that you were concerned that they might,
mm-hmm.
were you worried in the process?
Oh,
if you were worried, what good did that do you?
None whatsoever. None whatsoever. I had a good teacher. With me growing up, there was an individual that was the perfect worrier, right? And in that perfect worrying, I would kind of laugh at it. So it kind of put it to a fact that I didn't worry. Now, does that mean that I could go around with I don't care attitude about things? No, absolutely not. But how I internalize things, I don't always share with people because it's a personal thing. From a very young age, I no longer think that there's any problem that I need to give my overall surrenderance to.
What do you mean?
I don't need to surrender to any problem, regardless of what it is. Unless you want to, it's always a choice. And people do what they do for different reasons. And I respect people for just because they are. So it works. It's an individual thing. No one person can tell you what to do. But I would just say focus more on you and then establish how it's the best and what's the healthiest thing for you to do. Some people, it's extremely healthy for them to worry. Like I said, there's one individual that I knew, that's the perfect worrier. Oh, they do so well with it, and it's kind of funny, you know? That works well with them. So that's the only thing I would say for Jenna's. For Jenna's question, which I think is very poignant. It's an individual thing, and each individual is going to have a body of work that they're going to be able to look back on and learn from and decide from where they are right now. How do I want to handle it? Because that choice is yours. Never, ever, ever walk away from your choices. They're uniquely yours.
What do you mean, never walk away from your choices?
The choices, because you think about the choices that you have is always gives you the ability to exude your talents, your abilities, and I think that you don't engage in activities that will put you in a state of fantasy where it's not realistic to the circumstance. But I mean, if the house is on fire, you have a choice. Try to put the fire out. Try to watch it. Try to get out the house. there are many choices that you have. You can even sit there and let the fire consume you. That choice is yours. So remember, every choice that you have has a consequence. So you can do whatever it is you want to do in life. You can do anything, but there's consequences for everything that you do. Try to settle on those consequences. If I do this, what are the consequences of that? So that's just what I would suggest, Keith. Choices are great, regardless of how they come. So great question, Jenna. And what I want to do real quick is I want to get into some of the things of what's in the news and then jump into in this last 30 minutes of the show. Real quick, a couple of things. We put in there some things that's what's in the news. And I'm Scotty, I want Scotty to play something that happened at the UN. And I think it's very, very, very pretty darn good. Scotty sent it to me. I thought it was just good, and I thank Scotty for sending it to me. But let me go over a couple of things in the news, and then when we come back out of a commercial break, we'll go into that. From RT International, China refutes reports of sending troops to Venezuela to help Maduro. There were reports that China sent over 120 troops to Venezuela to support Maduro. Well, they probably already had people there, and believe me, they are definitely going to defend Maduro. Check out that. Next article from RT International. Venezuela won't become the second Syria. And this was said by the Russian foreign minister. Says that South America won't back military invasion versus Maduro. Nope. Next article that was significant. We have to go back to this. Is U.S. must choose. Turkey hits back at Pence with his own ultimatum over the S-400 row. Check out that. And so what happened was that the U.S. had gave Turkey ultimatum about having the S-400. If they want to be in NATO, they need to get rid of that. Well, Turkey responded. NATO's breaking up, y'all. And then so next article, Russia and Venezuela, why Putin has sent troops to back up Nicolas Maduro. And this one is really, really critical. This is from CNBC. And this is Sheila Blair. Is college worth it? We're going to have to catch this on Financial Friday. When one thing about Blair, and she's the former FDIC chairperson, what she said, and most people may have missed what she said a long time ago, she gave everybody, to me, she had one of the most profound financial statements that I've ever heard was by this individual. And I respected her so much for what she said. And this is what she said. It was a while back when she was the FDIC chair, Federal Deposits Insurance Corporation, right? For the overall banking. They're not a federal institution. It's a private corporation. And they don't have much cash at all. She said that austerity measures will surely come. The last thing you ever want to hear a FDIC chairman said. She said austerity measures, one of her most profound, while she was the FDIC chair, that's what she said, austerity measures will surely come. The last person you want to say that. And what that means, we're going to cover that. So that's one more from Press TV. Syria warns Israel, all options on the table for liberating the Golan Heights. And Keith has some. What you got, Keith?
What time is your break?
It's now. So we're getting ready to go into our last commercial break. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, give us a call, 704-802-5056. Scotty, when we come back, if you would play that UN with Bolivia and the U.S., we'd greatly appreciate it. You're listening to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
I now give the floor to the President of Bolivia.
Thank you. I'll play the best part first.
El presidente de Estado.
President of the United States of America, my brother, Antonio Guterres, Secretary General of the United Nations, fellow presidents, brothers and sisters of the Security Council, I would like to say to you frankly and openly here, in no way is the United States interested in upholding democracy. If such were the case, it would not have financed coup d'etat and supported dictators. It would not have threatened with military intervention democratically elected governments, as it has done with Venezuela. The United States could not care less about human rights nor justice. If this were the case, it would have signed the international conventions and treaties for the protection of human rights. It would not have threatened the investigation mechanisms of the International Criminal Court, nor would it promote the use of torture, nor would it have walked away from the Human Rights Council, and nor would it have separated migrant children from their families, nor put them in cages. The United States is not interested in multilateralism. If it were interested in multilateralism, it would not have withdrawn from the Paris Agreement or given the cold shoulder to the Global Compact on Migration. It would not have launched unilateral attacks, nor have taken decisions such as illegally declaring Jerusalem to be the capital of Israel. This contempt for multilateralism is motivated by the thirst of the United States for geopolitical control and for the seizing of natural resources.
Here's another good part.
Brothers and sisters, we are convinced that it is crucial to have a discussion not just on the effects, but above all on the actions of the assaults on international peace, security, and justice that we are seeing. Let us take the example of Iran, a country which has been referred to this morning. In 1953, the United States financed, planned, and implemented a coup d'etat against a democratically elected government, which, in exercise of its legitimate sovereignty, nationalized its oil production, wresting it from the hands of an Anglo-US company. After that, for many decades, the United States supported an authoritarian government which allowed the profits from oil production to line the pockets of transnational companies. This situation endured until the revolution of 1979. And now that Iran has retaken control of its own resources, it is once again the victim of a U.S. siege. Bolivia categorically condemns the unilateral actions imposed by the government of the United States of America against Iran. Likewise, we condemn the fact that the United States has withdrawn from the JCPOA, hiding behind pretexts to continue its policy of interference and meddling in the internal affairs of this brother country, Iran. Brothers and sisters of the Security Council, we wish to refer to the region of the Middle East, a region rich in natural resources, but thus ripe to be, as it is, affected by invasion, war, and unjustified aggression that continue to cause pain and suffering for the peoples of the Middle East. This region of the world has been the setting for the three most egregious acts of aggression committed during the 21st century. The first act of aggression to which I refer is the illegal invasion of Iraq, based on the lie that that country possessed weapons of mass destruction. This invasion led to more than a million deaths. The second act of aggression is the overthrow of the government of Libya, which led to tens of thousands of deaths, whilst pretending that it was for humanitarian reasons. As a consequence, it has triggered serious political instability and unleashed a humanitarian crisis across the north of Africa. The third act of aggression to which I refer is the civil war in Syria, which, over the last 8 years, has cost the lives of more than 500,000 people. This war is the direct result of the interference and of the financing of armed groups and terrorist organizations who have pitted themselves against the Syrian government. Brothers and sisters, over the last few months, the United States has once again demonstrated its contempt for international law, for multilateralism, and for the purposes and principles of the Charter of the United Nations. Each time that the United States invades nations, launches missiles, or finances regime change, it does so behind a propaganda campaign which incessantly repeats the message that it is acting in the cause of justice, freedom, and democracy, in the cause of human rights or for humanitarian reasons. Brothers and sisters, in light of the aforementioned situations, I would like to hail those countries, France, Germany, the United Kingdom, China, and Russia, who have held firm in defense of the nuclear agreement signed with Iran. We praise also those countries who have not abandoned the Paris Agreement, those countries that defend the principles of sovereign equality of states, those countries that uphold the principle of non-interference in domestic affairs, those countries that respect international law and respect those commitments freely entered into and who defend multilateralism. Our congratulations to those countries. The responsibility of our generation is to hand over a fairer and more secure world to the following generation. We will only achieve this dream if we work together to consolidate a multipolar world, a world with common rules that are respected by and defended from all the threats ranged against the United Nations. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. President. I now give the floor to the President of Bolivia.
And here's the rest. It's good, too.
The Presidency of the Security Council has convened the members of this body to a discussion on the non-proliferation of weapons of mass destruction today. Bolivia hails from a region which has been duly declared nuclear weapon-free for more than half a century now. For this reason, I think I am in a position to recall Article Number 1 of the Treaty Prohibiting the Use of Nuclear Weapons, which states that each state party commits to never and under no circumstances developing, testing, producing, manufacturing, acquiring in any other way, possessing or stockpiling nuclear weapons or other nuclear devices. I call upon all states around this table to sign up to ratify, and to immediately implement this provision, and indeed all the provisions of said treaty. This is the best way of avoiding the catastrophic possibility of the use of weapons of this nature. This is a moral imperative and a duty that we owe to future generations. Brothers and sisters of the world, the member states of the United Nations are obliged to comply with the core purposes and principles of the Charter of 1945. Above all, we are obliged to abide by the principle of resolving international disputes through the use of peaceful settlement mechanisms. None of these mechanisms presupposes the use of weapons of any kind, quite the contrary. This is a call for negotiation, diplomacy, dialogue, and legal settlement, and these are the principles that should guide the actions of countries whenever faced with a disagreement or dispute. Bolivia is convinced that only through using these peaceful means will we be able to build fairer societies and societies willing to shoulder their shared responsibilities. We have to be capable of putting behind us and leaving on the pages of history books the primitive use of weapons to attack other peoples. I would like to highlight, as an example, the contribution made by the International Court of Justice, the primary judicial body of the United Nations system, which has been able to effectively resolve disputes between states in various parts of the world and states faced with different situations and complaints.
You saw these parts at the start. Please subscribe and click the bell.
Okay. That was Morales of Bolivia. Man, did he hammer it out. And what was so cool about it is that Trump had to and chairing the UN, he had to call on him. And so this is what I was speaking about the purging, that there was going to be a global purge of the United States. Because everything that he talked about was in contrary to the overall, the agenda and how the U.S. functions globally. So there's a global movement. And what I loved about what was being said is, if you notice, his overall, when he talked and he he actually addressed the world as brother and sister. And that's a subliminal message that's saying, listen, in my opinion, listen, we are all in this together. But every once in a while, we get these rogue nations that try to act in their own best interest and exploit all of us. And we have to come together as brothers and sisters, because we are, and deal with these type of rogue nations. And he laid it out so true. And if you see what he was saying, he was basically showing how in history the overall conduct of the U.S., and then now they're starting to say that they want to have the same, they're trying to use the same tactics of saying humanitarian legal reasons for intervening in Venezuela, when they said that in Syria, Iran, and all the other places. The U.S. has engaged in a coup, and I laid out the places. You know, just in Central and South America, there's hardly any other countries that the U.S. hasn't engaged in coups. And now the significance of this is that there are nations that are able to defend themselves against this. So now, as they come together collectively, what are they going to say? It's time to purge ourselves of this mentality. And they are. The setup is there for that to happen. And when it does happen, and as it continues to unfold, we're going to see a marked change in a lot of things here and globally. The rest of the world will move on from the United States because it has to. And it's going to be considered, in my opinion, and this is why I've been saying this since I've been on air, that all of these countries are going to come together. Because remember, he talked about the ICC and for war crimes and crimes against humanity. And then there's going to come out a ruling from that, and that's all going to be a part of the war. And then there is going to be a declaration of global war, and it's going to be against the U.S., in my overall opinion. They have no choice. And I'm just hoping that the U.S. will see that it's lost its position globally, and the only way for it to be able to be impactful again is to go away from what's made it what it is. But guess what that means? They're going to have to give up everything.
The United States is not going to be impactful again.
Yeah, I agree with you, Keith. The corporation, I totally agree with you. But the people that are here are going to be impactful. Impacted and impactful, I think. And so this is a case in point where there's a clear example of how the rest of the world is coming together. And I would say to you, listen to what's being said and listen to what's being leveled out. What's being leveled out basically throughout the world is that, hey, we know who this rogue nation is. We all know who they are, but we don't have to be beholden to them anymore. And you're going to see more and more countries take this stand. And they're going to take this stand by doing this, Chief, first and foremost. They're going to make agreements with each other first. An agreement among countries in today's world outside of the U.S. is an agreement against the U.S. and its policy. And then there is going to be a windfall of agreements. And then there is going to be, now that those agreements are in place, the enforcement of those agreements, because there's a breach, and that breach is going to be the U.S. That's how this, all of this is coming to truth. Now, how long will this take? It doesn't matter. It's already started the overall demise of the standard of living of everyone here. That should be the only thing that everyone listening should be really in tune to, in preparing for, because that's the one that's going to directly impact you and I. So the Bolivian president, he laid it out completely. And especially in light of how things are transpiring in Venezuela, I firmly believe that Venezuela is where the U.S. is going to die. The current establishment under the current paradigm, Venezuela is going to be, because I firmly believe it's going to be a resource-rich country that brings the U.S. down. And Venezuela, for all sense and purposes, really starting to bear that out and being the overall one that actually can do it, because they're going to get the support of the world against the U.S.
You keep saying they're going to.
Yeah. I think more and more are going to come in line.
I think it's already a done deal.
Yeah, I do too, Keith. I really do. It's pretty much there already. So I just want to thank everyone for chiming in today. Thank you, Keith, for being the co-host that you are. Brother Davis, Jenna, for calling in. And Scotty, thanks for the video. Man, that video, I got to listen to it a couple of times because he really, really... But the thing is, the impact that overall plea was able to garnish. Remember, they laughed at Trump at the UN. They didn't laugh when the Bolivian president Morales was speaking. They all knew, yes. You can hear the murmuring in the silence. So, much love, much respect, everyone. It's never goodbye. As always, we'll see you later. And before you ask for a fortune, make sure to give one away. Let me just say this. Next week I won't be able to have a show any day. I won't be able to do it. Will be the last day for a week. So next week we won't have a show. Next week, then the following week, great creator willing, we will. So much love, much respect. It's never goodbye. As always, we'll see you later. Talk to you soon. Peace.
Gold dinar would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.